We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go. It's the 5 at 5 with Grant and Danny.
Counting down in the city.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Presented by Wave Soda.
Up offense at the 5 at 5. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan in DC and Richmond and all over the country at radio.com. 5 at 5 brought to you by Wave Soda, which is awesome, super simple, just bubbly water, splash of real juice, and a little caffeine. It's unsweetened, no artificial sweeteners, just a clean finish, about 2 to 6 grams of sugar and 15 to 25 calories per can. Order now at wavesoda.com. Receive 15% off by entering promo code GAND. That's GAND. John Lester, the new national, is on the show in less than 10 minutes. Story number one in our 5 at 5, Wiz Rockets. John Wall against his former team last night, and Wall got the first laugh with another game looming in a couple weeks.
Never goes smoothly with the emotions involved on both sides. Uh-oh.
Westbrook and Wall.
Yep.
And now double technicals.
And look at it. Talking about emotions being involved. And these are the two guys that got traded for each other.
John, what was the discussion between you and Russ that led to the double technicals?
Trash talking. I mean, that's what two competitive guys do. Russ been kicking my ass for years. This is only my third win, I think, against Russ since I've been in the league. So, I mean, he's a hell of a talent. I know he's dealing with injury the same I was, and we're just trying to keep getting better and trying to lead our team.
I loved that moment, by the way. That was, to me, the highlight of the game. Not necessarily awesome. Getting a technical foul, but, you know, Westbrook doesn't have that much right now in the tank. Crossed Wall up bad, got him on the ground, started barking at him. Wall's talking about the lead. There's some animosity. They're naturally going to be compared to each other, A, because they came in the league around the same time, but, you know, they were traded for each other. There's some negative feelings about each city, and there's baggage there. But that was actually a fun moment. Sports can be competitive. That's okay, and Wall had a great answer and attitude about it.
Great attitude about it. What a cut there. Yeah. I mean, what a
awesome.
Great job by Duck all the way around with all that audio. But him saying he's been kicking my butt for years, like, what a humble, decent moment. I mean, he's just a good guy. I've always liked John Wall.
Same.
I think he is hopefully going to continue to play at this level and going to make Houston some, I won't say, you know, look like they are right for making the trade, but hopefully some wins that they wouldn't have had otherwise. I think he's still got some basketball left. He may have lost a little bit of the burst, but he's certainly back right now from his Achilles and playing okay basketball. The Wizards get another chance at him at home coming up within the next couple of weeks. They got to be better. Russell Westbrook has to be better. They're just not getting nearly enough out of him. And Bradley Beal needs help. Remember, they got nothing in terms of a rotation and a bench now. They're missing about half of their roster due to COVID, but they are 3-10, and bottom line is, that's not okay. It doesn't matter who's up and who isn't. 13 games in after the move that they made to be 3-10 and getting what they are out of Westbrook's not enough. Let's go to number two in our 5 at 5. Nobody getting into the Hall of Fame in the class of 2021, according to Tim Mead, who is the Hall of Fame president.
For the first time since 2013 and the ninth time since voting began in 1936, no candidate reached the necessary 75% threshold for election. Kurt Schilling led the group with votes on 71.1% of ballots cast, finishing just 16 votes short of election.
Outrageous. Oh, this drives me crazy. I'd love to do 4.5 hours on this, to be honest with you, today and then tomorrow, too, to unload the clip about it. Here's the deal. The character clause is what's going to be invoked by the voters, right? 14 of them returned a blank ballot. I hope they got small paper cuts when they folded up that blank ballot as they smugly stuffed the envelope into the mail. Here's the character clause. It's only about 10 years worth of a certain kind of drug. That's what these guys are objecting to. They don't object to other elements of character, including other alleged steroid users, by the way, that are already in the Hall of Fame. It's for some reason this particular group bothers them so much that they can't put Hall of Fame caliber baseball players into the Hall of Fame. Nobody cares about the integrity part of that sentence, where it's about integrity, contributions on the field, and character. How about integrity? Things like, I don't know, pushing segregation, actual racists, physical assaulters, domestic abusers, all of those guys, comfortable plaques that you can go visit in baseball museum, the Hall of Fame. But not these guys for about a decade-long period who absolutely took performance-enhancing drugs, but that's the bad kind, not the greenies that guys like Hank Aaron took, guys like Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle took. This is so stupid. I'm so upset about it. Back to you, Grant.
Yeah, you said it really well. And like you, we should circle back to this because I'm passionate about it and we tend to, it seems like, largely agree. But Hall of Fame voting comprises 9 rules, supposedly. Number 5 of those 9, the character clause, seems to be the sticking point here. And it's listed as integrity, sportsmanship, and character. But we just recently started implementing it, and we just recently started deciding that this is increasingly important. It's actually been around since the 40s. That's when the character clause came into being initially. It was implemented, oh, by the way, by then-Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis, you may know, ironically, a noted racist, who implemented the character clause into who gets into the Hall of Fame and who does not. Figure that out. But yeah. He introduced the clause, supposedly, to give less accomplished players a chance to get entry into the Hall of Fame according to their character. And so where we are now is that the Baseball Writers Association of America is in this state of not knowing what they should be voting on or what character looks like this year compared to 5 years ago, compared to 50 years ago. And you've got guys like Jeff Passan of ESPN who just outright gave up his vote in 2017. And he cited a letter from Joe Morgan at the time, Joe Morgan asking voters not to admit steroid users, as he called it, to the most sacred place in baseball. And this was via Axios. I saw this today, but it was just such a great quote from Passan's story back in 2017 when he gave up his vote. He said, if by sacred place the hall means one in which racists, wife beaters, drunks, gamblers, and purveyors of manifold moral turpitude otherwise are celebrated, well, Cooperstown is a shining beacon of divinity set upon a hill of hypocrisy. What a line.
I love that. That's perfect.
By Jeff Passan.
Yeah, the steroid
era. And that
was
in 2017 when he basically said, you know what? I'm out. Done with this.
That's all for me. So the quick line I was going to throw at you, nobody from the steroid era can get in. That's how we feel about this. And that era was presided over by Hall of Famer Bud Selig. I'm sure that all makes sense. Tell me more.
Ugly. Dan Miller was on the show earlier today. Item number 4 in our 5 at 5. Matthew Stafford of the Detroit Lions is on the move. We don't know where to yet. The Lions are fielding phone calls, and Miller, who calls Lion games, says he'll make you a contender.
You don't have to convince me. I'm a big Matthew Stafford guy, and I hate seeing this happen. I understand why it's happening. And look, it may have happened even if Matthew hadn't requested it. You got a new GM and a new head coach and a quarterback going into year 13. They may have said, look, we've got a plan here, and it doesn't involve a guy going into year 13, and we may not be winning till year 14. So who knows what would have happened. But whoever gets Matthew Stafford here over the next, you know, couple of weeks, whenever it's announced, can't be executed till March, they're getting a guy that can still play. And if it's a team that is a quarterback shy of being ready to contend, they're going to contend when they get Matthew Stafford.
I think you're absolutely right about that. Get as angry at him as you want, Detroit Lion fans. You're 100% right. That guy's a bum. He's never won. I'm sure that it's his fault. 11-5 quarterback when he was surrounded with a good roster. 10-6 a couple times. 9-7 multiple times over. His skill set is better every year. The numbers will fluctuate depending on who's healthy and who plays. But usually more than 80% of the quarterbacks. That's a tier that Washington hasn't been in, that Chicago hasn't been in, but a number of teams that have been constantly riding the leftover Case Keenum tier, the carousel of crap, never want to be on ever again. You've been fortunate that you had that. The problems were myriad, but they were elsewhere, not at your quarterback spot. That guy can play, and he's going to help somebody.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. That is your 5 at 5. And you're wondering, well, wait a second, I need one more item.
Hold on.
Well, the fifth of the five items on our 5 at 5 is awaiting us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. And that is that the Nationals have made official that they have added left-handed starting pitcher John Lester, a five-time All-Star, a three-time World Series champion, and one of the most accomplished playoff pitchers of his era to their roster. He'll be in the middle of this rotation this year, and he joins us now on G&D. John, we're Grant and Danny. Thanks for the call. How are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing great, man. Appreciate the time. Why'd you want to come to Washington, man? What drew you here?
I mean, I think a lot of things. Obviously, their pitching staff, the roster, chance to win, the coaching staff. Obviously, I know a lot of guys over there. And, you know, your GM, Rizzo, had a few things to sell me on, so I was really excited.
Yeah, it makes sense. You come to this rotation now with Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin, and they needed another veteran, and it seems like you're a perfect fit. You know, for you at this point, you probably had all kinds of options, whether it was other teams or at 37, you could start thinking about, you know, whether you wind it down. What gives you the drive right now, not only to keep throwing, but what gives you the confidence that you want to get out there and still put people away from the left side in 2021?
I mean, I think the big thing is just winning. I love to win. I love to be a part of rotations like this one. You know, I mean, look at this thing. I mean, you got three guys that are studs, and I'm excited just to kind of sit in the background and listen to them and see what they do and compete with them. You know, I've watched, obviously, Max and Stras and Corbin from afar. I've got to be at a few All-Star games with Max and kind of be around him and see what makes him tick a little bit. But I'm just excited to do it for 162 and see how these guys compete. And hopefully I can, you know, kind of hold up my end of the stick and be a part of that and get some W's along the way. But I think, man, it's just, there's a lot of good things here in D.C. that I'm excited about. And, you know, one thing I know for sure, having Davey over there, is we're not going to lack in having fun. So, you know, if you're having fun, you're going to win ball games, and I think that's an important thing.
How have you evolved as a pitcher over the years, John? I remember when you were coming up that, you know, that spike curveball was nasty as all hell, the rising fastball striking guys out. A lot more cutters, changeups now have kind of added to the repertoire. I hate the term crafty because it's so cliche because you're left-handed, but is that appropriate? I mean, how have you evolved in your mind as a pitcher?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you can't just rely on throwing anymore. You know, you have to rely on beating guys to spots and picking your chances to, you know, to go inside and run that cutter in there. You know, the changeup has become more of a weapon for me over the last year or so. You know, really, you know, using the backdoor curveball, the curveball under, you know, obviously the backdoor cutter and the cutter under. So, you know, you have to know how to use both sides of the plate and make the ball go both ways. And I think, you know, obviously when your velo goes down, you need to do that a lot quicker than say a guy like, you know, Max, who's still blowing it up there at 95, 96. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's it. You just have to learn to use both sides of the plate and you know, all four quadrants, up, down, in, out, and make sure you keep guys, you know, trying to guess a little bit to where that, you know, that 90, hopefully 91, 92 can sneak on by them. You know, where you get into trouble is when you can't locate that heater and they can pick a quadrant to sit and you got to try to beat them with that, and you're not going to do it, you know, a lot of times. So, you know, just try to outsmart them. You know, sometimes you can't outsmart them, so you try to outcompete them. And you know, I'll do that as much as I can. I'll try to compete my butt off for this team and this organization. And hopefully, like I said, there's more W's than losses.
Nats fans know all about John Lester's competitiveness. They've been watching him for years, and we saw him up close and personal over the years in the postseason as well. You mentioned Davey Martinez. You were with him as you guys go on a World Series run. You were the MVP of the LCS that year. What's your relationship like with him? How tight are you guys? And what's made him so successful, do you think, as a skipper here?
You know, I think, well, our relationship is pretty good, pretty close, I should say. You know, ever since he came over, or you know, when I was with the Cubs and he came over, man, it's just a different – I think what makes him unique is day in and day out, he brings energy. And that's a hard thing to do in this game. You know, it's such a long, long season. And especially in that position, even as a bench coach, more so as a manager, it's hard to bring that energy every single day to where you can bring your guys up. If he does that, man, he's just like a Energizer bunny. I mean, it just keeps going, you know. Like, and the big thing with that is when you bring guys energy up, guys start having fun, which means they're playing relaxed, they're not pressing, they don't think today is the end of the world if they go 0-4. You know, you just keep grinding. And I think you saw that, what was it, 18, 19? When did you guys win the World 19? When you guys 19, won the World Series? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you guys went and started just kind of creeping. And all of a sudden you caught fire, and how much fun was going on in that dugout day in and day out. And you could – that translates on the field. You know, the pinch hitters come up, they're loose, they're ready to go. The pitchers are out there just – hey, man, I'm letting it all out on the line. I'm going to do my job. And, you know, that I think that's what makes Davey unique. You know, he makes the hard decisions when he has to, but otherwise he just lets his boys play, and you know, you see the end result.
Grant, I like that John Lester's giving you and me, just pudgy idiots, a little bit of credit for that 2019 run. You know what I mean?
We,
a little bit of you guys in there.
We worked very hard for it, John. You know that.
Yeah, we clapped super hard. Oh, dude, that's the best.
Hey, everybody pulls their own rope on that one.
That's right. John Lester with us here on Grant and Danny, new Nats arm. I mean, so you kind of touched on this in terms of developing as a pitcher and beating guys to spots. I'd love for you to comment on just how different it is from when you came up in 06 with Boston. Just hitters, as you said, all or nothing. They don't care if they strike out. They're here to hit fly balls and home runs. Has that affected things at all for you just in terms of your approach?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, I mean, I feel like you have a lot more, you know, deeper counts. You know, guys, your outcomes are three. It's a walk, a strikeout, or a homer, pretty much. So the big thing in this game right now is minimizing walks, right? So if you minimize walks, then that hopefully prevents the 2-3 run homers. You know, now if you give up singles and then you give up the 2 or 3 run homer, as a pitcher, you can at least lie your head on the pillow that night and go, you know what, they beat me. The walks are what's going to kill you in today's game. It just is what it is, which then drives the pitch count up, which then allows you not to go the third time through the lineup, which is kind of everybody's, you know, skit right now. So, yeah, I mean, it changes your approach. I mean, I think you have to be – there's that fine line of nibbling and then the fine line of attacking on too much of the plate. So you have to really kind of pick your poisons and pick your spots to guys. So that's become harder because lineups are now – they have more depth, and you know, everybody can hit homers now. So, you know, you like I said, I think it adds for me that competition part, that cat and mouse game of my game plan's better than yours, and I'm going to execute better than you. And you know, like I said, hopefully at the end of the game, those walks don't hurt you, and they beat you by swinging the bat. I think that's a big thing in today's game. You need to get beat by the other team swinging the bat, which means hopefully your guys swung the bat well and you're in the ball game at the end of the day.
John Lester on Grant and Danny. You can see why, you know, he is beloved in each organization. Sharp guy and great on air with us here in his first installment on G&D. But I'll also say great with fans. Fans are going to love him. What you did at the end of your time in Chicago was one of the coolest things ever. For people that don't know about it, I don't know if it was your idea or somebody else's, but if they were on your quote-unquote team, give them a raise. So Lester tweets out, regardless of what's next, I want to thank the fans for the past 6 years. And basically, you picked a weekend. You pick, I think it was 4 or 5 different bars that you dig in Chicago. And then you set up through those bars that if fans came in and said, put it on John Stab, you were going to buy Cubs fans their first beer.
So awesome.
And sure enough, you had the read receipts. Like, you posted them. I think it was like $5,000-some and 1,300 Miller Lights on your tab at all those bars over the course of a whole weekend. What an amazing idea.
Yeah, I mean, it was a couple friends of mine. I got a good buddy out of Boston that I've known for a long time, and I actually became fairly close to a guy that works for Molten Coors up there in Chicago, and we were just talking one day, just kind of BSing, and they came up with this idea and we ran with it, and obviously it turned out awesome. You know, I really you really couldn't have wrote a script any better than how it turned out. I mean, with everything going on in the world, we were able to get some outdoor seating, football that weekend. I think it was Halloween weekend, which made it even cooler. So yeah, I mean, it was perfect. And, you know, it ended up turning out well. And, you know, I think the unique part about it is everybody, you know, takes out kind of that newspaper ad or does something on Instagram or Twitter or whatnot. And, you know, we just wanted to do something a little different. And I know how Chicago is. They've bought me plenty of drinks along the way.
They don't mind drinking.
That's great.
No. I mean, who doesn't? You know, you kind of need to decompress sometimes. And, you know, so it was just, like I said, it was a perfect storm in all aspects of it, with the places to the people to just how it turned out. I mean, it was an awesome, awesome deal. I'm glad I got to be a part of it as well, just as much as the fans did.
John, I'm going to sneak this one in here. You mentioned Max Scherzer earlier. I made the mistake, I think it was like 4 years ago. I just kind of wasn't thinking. Before a game that he was starting, I said, "Hey, Max." And you would have thought I tried to like kick his dog or something. He looked at me like I was the worst person in the world. And I reminded myself, don't ever do that. Don't look at Max on days that he's pitching. How close to that do you come? Because your competitiveness is legendary. Obviously, high level. You don't do what you've done in this game without being, you know, as competitive as you are. Are you like that on game day? Were you just a different dude?
Yes and no. I mean, if it's one of my teammates, no. If it's, no offense, one of the media members, yes.
Me, sure. I get it.
Yeah. You know, I put my headphones in and I walk around, but the music that I'm listening to is kind of at a low volume. So, you know, if teammates want to talk to me, that doesn't bother me. I talk to people. You know, I really don't kind of click in until I go out there to start warming up. And that's when, you know, that little extra kicks in, and that's, you know, that's where that competitiveness, that wanting to win, that drive. You know, I kind of compare it. I tell people all the time, like, hey, listen, I don't get four at bats every game. I get one day. So this is my day, and I want it to go as well as it possibly can. And hopefully we get that W and we move on to the next guy and he gets that W and move on and so forth. So that's kind of how I look at it. And that's why that day means so much to me. I work so hard to get to that point. And, you know, I'm not going to not talk to my teammates, you know, just because it's my day. But at the same time, I'm starting to get locked in, you know, from the moment I'm there till kind of leading up till I go out there to get ready.
I take two things out of that. John Lester's day to start is like a young lady's wedding day, right? It's his day.
His day.
Leave it be. Let him do his thing. He's picking the music. And the second thing is that if Danny comes up to him and asks him if he finished Bridgerton with his wife on the day that he pitches, he's going to stare at Danny and tell Danny to go away. John, we appreciate the time, man. It's great having you on the show, and we're happy to have you in
DC. Welcome, buddy.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I'm excited.
Absolutely. We are, too. We're pumped to have you in the middle of the rotation. John Lester, a veteran who's made 22 starts and pitched in 26 games in the playoffs to a 2.5 earned run average through the years. Awesome postseason resume that's helped net him 3 World Series rings. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. We're with you until 6:30 this evening. As we continue, want to get into what Jack Del Rio told us about Chase Young, our expectations for him moving forward. We'll get back into what we think about Matt Stafford to Washington here on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan in D.C. and Richmond. Welcome back. Tom Plyme and Darris Dameron production. Thanks to them for their work behind the scenes. Jason Witten has announced he is retiring again. He retired after the 2017 season. Seems like forever ago in 2018, he was on the broadcast for Monday Night Football. And a lot of people made fun of him a whole lot. I didn't really understand why, but people think that's an easy job and it's a hard job. But anyway, everyone on Twitter likes to make fun of people. So
they
he got crushed them, yeah, constantly for being a color commentator in his first year. And he may have bit off more than he can chew. I mean, there's probably a better way to get your feet wet than on Monday Night Football in primetime. But he decided to leave the booth and go back to football. And so he caught 63 passes for the Cowboys in 2019 and then ended up in the Raiders this past year, linking up with the other guy who left the Monday Night Football booth, John Gruden. And this past season, he caught all of 13 passes and a couple touchdowns. Was it worth it to come back? I'm sure he would say yes because he – he missed the game, and he missed that feeling of running out of the tunnel, and it's probably cool to score those six more touchdowns to get to 74 in your career, but he came back to try to win a Super Bowl, and the Cowboys were ultra disappointing in 2019, and the Raiders missed the playoffs in 2020. I wonder if he had it all to do over again, what he would do, because he's not going back to the Monday Night Football booth. Maybe he can get in line for a Fox job, but Greg Olsen, who's better at it than he is and is another longtime tight end, is already claiming one of those open spots, I would think. So he made a little bit of a calculated risk, and eventually he'll be back in a booth, I'm sure, but I don't know what he would do now if he had it to do over again.
Remember, did you see the movie Rocky Balboa? I think I've got my Rockies right. That's when he's very old, and his son, the handsome guy that's on the NBC show now, is like his trainer, kind of, and he's like way over the hill, and he knows it, and he's basically talking about, I got this monster inside me, I got to get it out, I got one last demon that I got to fight, and then I can walk away. That's how I felt about Jason Witten, because I don't think he was making a practical or correct decision, if that makes any sense, because you touched on it. You're already at the highest level of broadcasting, and you'll probably get bumped down to AAA. You'll probably be on the, you know, like a C team or a D team of somebody, because you maybe weren't ready for Monday Night Football. It was a gamble, and it certainly didn't, I would say, didn't really pay off, because that booth was much maligned. But he certainly had a future in it, and he may have kind of bumped himself to the back of the queue there. But in terms of, was it the right call? I don't know if it was right, but I bet you he had that itch that he just had to scratch one more time.
Like, yeah, and I want to clarify really quick, because I think it did come off as me asking, was it the right thing to do?
It's his career. I think it's fair.
It's his job.
Yeah,
it's, you know, of course. He wants to come back. He should come back. I'm not going to tell Alex Smith to retire, and I'm not going to tell Jason Witten not to play football and go make money to catch passes, you know, 7 yards at a time and get tackled by the first person that breathes on you. But I just wonder if you're him, knowing what you know now. Supposedly he came back because he thought he could win a Super Bowl with the Cowboys. Two seasons, a lot of work you put in, no playoff appearances, as like the seventh option this year in an offense, and maybe last year the fifth option or something like that. Was it worth it? I would just be curious with some truth serum to see what he said. And does he care at all that he's not in the Monday Night Football booth? I mean, frankly, he might have been out of the booth anyway, because they, as you were talking about, they overhauled it, and it's new look anyway, and it's a better booth now as it is. So he might have been demoted to some college football game, you know, out west on a Saturday night anyway. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's one of those philosophical things, right, where it, was it worth the shot? Because the money and less, I don't know, physical wear and tear is probably that Monday Night Football booth, or they're in television, you know, wearing the suit and pretending to know what play is coming and getting all excited and squealing like, ooh, Jim! You know, that's where the excitement is, I think, for a lot of folks. But you're right. Comes back to Dallas, disappointment at the end, and then this Raiders team, you know, he's watching Darren Waller run around and catch routes, and he's basically a glorified fullback, leaking out of the backfield for a couple touchdowns, but not much of an impact there. Only 13 catches, as you kind of touched on. But a great player. I mean, a great, great, great career. He had a 110-catch season in 2012. I mean, he would live in the 80s and 90s in terms of catches in his prime. Really, really productive. So a great career. But those last couple years, you know, that's kind of like your – I'm not comparing the two. Obviously, this guy's way better. It's kind of like your Willie Mays as a Met sort of thing, where you don't want to remember those as your sort of final runs, right? He's Willie Mays the Giant, please and thank you.
Looking at Jason Witten's career, what is the phrase? Is it "far be it for me"? Is that the phrase?
Yes. And well, let me see how you're using it, I think.
Well, I think what I'm trying to say is, like, I'm a Washington football fan who he torched for years, so I'm probably not the right guy to say this, but,
there
right, far be it for me. That's the thing? Is that what?
You got it.
Okay. I feel like that's like an old person saying, but maybe it's a new – maybe the new kids are saying it on the block as well. Anyway – he torched Washington. I'm pretty sure if you wait long enough tonight, he'll catch another six passes against the football team. And before Zach Ertz, he had the 13 and the 15-catch games, and he had the two touchdown games, and there was always the back-breaking 19-yard touchdown in the seam for Jason Witten. He's a volume guy, though. Jason Witten should be a Hall of Famer. Jason Witten is one of the best tight ends who ever lived in terms of numbers. Lifetime achievement, all of the seasons he had, playing the 16 games, going out and catching 90-plus balls. You know, he was one of the first guys of this generation of tight ends that actually was not just a blocker but a pass catcher. In 2004, when he got 122 targets and caught 87 balls, it was like him and Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates. Like, they were the OGs. And now everyone's trying to find their Darren Waller and their Jordan Reed and their Travis Kelce. But if you look at that string of seasons where he had well over 100 and generally around 140 targets, where he would catch an average of probably 90 or so balls a season, mm-hmm. he went for over 1,000 yards four times in 6 years, and it was clockwork that he was going for over 900 for the bulk of his career. It's just so utilized. Now, I always made the case, and I always used to argue years and years and years ago with Cowboys fans about Chris Cooley being like a more useful tight end and a quote-unquote better player because he could like break tackles and extend a play and actually do things after the catch. I'm pretty sure Jason Witten, in his career, which spanned from 2003 to 2020, 17 seasons, and I think I have this number right, I think he broke two tackles, and I remember both of them. But he was huge, and he's just kind of this big oafing dude without speed. Generally was going to average some years 9 yards per catch, in a good year 11 yards per catch. He never averaged 12, not one time. But it was volume. It was third and three. There he is, 7 yards. Just lock it in. 95 catches for 996 yards. He'll be in the Hall of Fame. There's no doubt in my mind. And he's deserving.
And he should be.
It sounds like I'm knocking him. He's deserving. But I'll tell you what he's not. He should never have kind of scared you. Not Kelce, you know, not Waller, none of these guys now. Not an athlete like those guys. He was just pass catcher who got to the sticks and fell over. That's pretty much what he was.
I mean, you're right. He was huge, but he was a technician when it came to getting open. It wasn't always a ton of space that he created, but it was enough, and those throws were on time with some decent quarterback play when you think of Romo. And that's where Romo's bread was butter, too, by the way, were those 1-2-3 out, because Witten, as he's breaking, you know, beating the linebacker, because you're right, he doesn't scare you. He's not winning down the seam. He's not going to run by your safety. He's not running by a cornerback. He's, you know, if he's lined up on a nickel guy, he's going to use his body and shield it, you know, like a player in the post. Just a really productive, solid player. Guys like that, and again, he just killed us as Washington backers and people that cared. But guys like that that squeeze every drop out of their ability, I always have a lot of respect for. You know, like there are a lot faster. They're a lot stronger. They're a lot quicker. There are a lot of people that, you know, probably could have been more productive than that guy, but they somehow weren't. As you touched on, for a lot of years, that dude put up a lot of numbers.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. At the top of the hour at 6 o'clock, we can get back into nobody getting into the Hall of Fame in baseball in 2021 and how ludicrous it is that so many of the game's best ever may not get in. But before we do that, next, Jared Goff could be competing for the quarterback job with an undrafted free agent signee, even though he makes over $100 million, can the Rams actually do that? They can say they're going to compete, but when you're paying a guy with Jared Goff is paid, can you have a real competition, or do you just have to move on from him this offseason? It's the only way to get out of him being your starter. That's next on G&D. But they just don't seem that interested in acknowledging that they are riding with Jared Goff. Here is the GM, Les Snead, when he was asked about this.
Well, I mean, but in this job, right, you're always going to get questions. So I think that...
I'm giving you a chance. I'm giving you one more chance to say he's your quarterback.
Oh, Jared Goff's he's a Ram right now. So what's the date? I'll look at... Let's see. January 26. I mean, that's a fact. That's obvious. He's right. I mean, he's number two in wins. Him and Sean have partnered together.
First of all, number two in wins. That's a stat I don't care about at all. But at least he said something. But that cut it tells you everything you need to know. And it's almost laughable. The media, I don't know who the guy is, I'm sorry, but the person in the media says, hey, and we're picking up clearly after they've been beating him around for a few minutes about trying to, are you going to endorse Jared Goff or you're not? Are we going to continue to do this dog and pony show where, you know, he's not your quarterback or he is? And he says, I'm going to give you one more shot here. Tell us that Jared Goff's your quarterback. And Snead said, well, today is January 26th and today he's your quarterback. Like, imagine, Danny, if you asked your wife.
Yeah.
You went up to her at dinner tonight and you said,
you're my
hey,
wife
Megan?
Now.
Yeah, you're right, exactly. You go, we're going to be married forever? Like, you're still my wife a year or two from now, right? And she goes, I'm your wife today. How would that make you feel?
Mark Murphy, let me if people think we're reading too much into this, Mark Murphy, president of the Packers, right? This is what he said about his quarterback. I'll say this. There's no way in heck that Aaron is not going to be on the Packers. I mean, he's going to be the MVP of the league. He might have had his best year ever. He's our unquestioned leader, and you know we're not idiots. Now contrast that with, what's today? You know, we haven't traded him. As of right now, Jared Goff is a Ram. That's his version of Jay Gruden's, they're playing.
When a team says for now, as of today, it means they would like to change whatever they're talking about in the future as quickly as possible. So when someone says he's our quarterback for now, he's our quarterback today, by addressing the time, you are saying that he is not your quarterback tomorrow, or he is not your quarterback in the future. And if you don't want that to be the takeaway, then don't say anything other than he is our quarterback. And they could just lie about it. A lot of coaches over a lot of years have. Mike Shanahan was good about it. People still act like he actually thought John Beck and Rex Grossman were great when he staked his reputation on them. He didn't care about them. He just didn't have anybody else. So, you know, coaches can pick and choose. Do you say something and then people call you a liar? Or do you be honest and then we pick apart your words? In this case, Les Snead was honest. But I will say that, Danny, I saw this today from NFL.com, and I think this report is from – I got to see who the actual reporter is. I'm just seeing the write-up on NFL Media. Looks like Rap Sheet has it. He says – Rappaport says that the Rams are going to have an open competition if Jared Goff is not traded between he and John Wolford. And to that I say, how is that possible? How can you possibly have an open competition? I get that sports are the ultimate meritocracy. But with this guy, forget the two Pro Bowls, you paid him a $100 million contract.
You paid him so much money.
Wolford is, if he improves a little bit, a Jag, right? I mean, he might be better than Jared Goff, for all I know. He looked like he at least can make plays with his feet. But he was a Wake Forest undrafted 2018 quarterback who was throwing passes to the dude who starred on The Bachelor at Wake. Can you actually potentially have a competition wide open where Goff is a backup with his contract to John Wolford? Is that a thing they could do?
If they could do it if they couldn't trade him. You know, like, because
but you
here's
could,
the thing, their
you,
window
you could
is
see
limited.
Him being on the bench with a $100 million contract.
There's not a ton of precedent for it, but you've got Aaron Donald, you've got pieces. If all you need is competence, however you get it, maybe that's the play. I mean, they're going to try to get rid of him, I think. But if they can't, maybe that's what happens.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. I got to imagine he's gone. I don't see any way that you could have Jared Goff on your roster, $100 million man, on the bench watching John Wolford. Stretch run of the show next.
If you are what you say you are, a superstar, then have no fear.
G&D on the Fan, 30 more minutes with you tonight. In case you're curious, we're wearing a navy blue Nationals sweatshirt with gray and black Under Armour sweatpants, Nike kicks, and here's the trick. White socks with the black Nike kicks and the gray sweatpants, because I don't think anybody's going to be judging me in my home today.
No, sir, not today. So I've got a normal, you know, long sleeve Under Armour kind of t-shirt. It's very, very comfortable. Sweat pantaloons. I would offer my normal sort of warm winter socks, a little bit of grip on the bottom. I'd also add, though, just harkening back to the beginning of the show, I got a Band-Aid, some gauze, and a wrap around my left foot because of a Groot that was in my foot that was taken out this afternoon around 1:15.
You've got a Band-Aid and gauze on your foot right now?
Yeah, just because it helps mitigate the pain of stepping in that spot.
So it's not like we're not bleeding in show.
No. It's more of a padding thing for now.
I like that. We're cushioning it. And then by tomorrow, are we full speed, do you think? Or are you still going to wear something? What are you going to do? Do you have to go on the trainer's table and have them tell you what their plan is for you? Are you questionable?
I'm hoping to be. Yeah, I'm hoping. I think I would call myself a game time decision. I'm hopeful to be back on my feet doing my normal minimal amount of activity. You know, I'd hate to be on the shelf and miss a big game like tomorrow, where I, you know, might walk around and, like, you know, have to go from one room to the other room. I'd hate to miss out on that, but I might. You know, it's up to the trainers. I just respect what they say. Obviously, I'm in their hands. They do a great job.
I've always felt that you're a gamer, and that if you can finish a game while getting hurt, the next day you should play. And I know there's a thought of, like, swelling, or maybe you feel it more after the game. I've always been comforted. Like, he got through that game, so he can go next game. He got through this show. I think you're going to be fine tomorrow. But we won't know until you wake up and you test it out pregame.
That's right. So, you know, you got to know your body.
We did not mention this on the show yet, and I wanted to really quickly. Sekou Smith passed away yesterday. If that's not a name that people know, he's an NBA reporter and an analyst for 20 years, and he died apparently with COVID-19 at 48 years old. Sekou was on our show in middays, I would venture to guess, dozens of times in our first few years together, when his schedule and our schedule kind of aligned, always accommodating and always came on the show. But just really sad. You know, not even 50 years old. Everybody has loved this guy, who follows basketball with Turner and NBA TV and a longtime writer. And when I heard that yesterday, it was one of those things. I have not talked to Sekou Smith on air in a long time. I haven't seen him in person in a long, long time. But I saw that, and it just stopped me, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Where I said, how did that happen? He's not even 50. And then I heard it was COVID. And it, for some reason, it just made it even worse. But
no, for sure. Yeah. Rest in peace. Yeah. Thinking about his family, obviously. And you know, you and I just got to know him a little bit through hits and having him on the show. And, you know, I followed him, and great reporter and guy that everybody really got along really well with. I mean, he was a mensch. He took time to help out younger folks. And I remember, you know, he and I messaged a couple times. I had him on at night. He was kind enough to, you know, come on, well, with one eye on a television screen, you know, basically reporting about a game or live tweeting or whatever, to give me some time when I was kind of finding my way doing nights, and was always super, super kind to everybody. And that one stung a little bit, man. I saw his name was trending, and my kind of, you know, my heart sank. But, yeah, that one's a bummer.
Yeah, rest in peace to Sekou Smith, and thoughts with his wife, Heather, and his kids, Gabriel, Riley, and Cameron. That was tough to hear yesterday. Earlier in the show, we were talking about Matthew Stafford and what you would trade for Matthew Stafford. Danny ruffled some feathers by saying he would give up Chase Young. He said, Terry McLaurin, wide receiver, untouchable. Chase Young, edge rusher, take him. Take Montez Sweat, take whoever you want other than Terry McLaurin. Name your player, and I'll throw in a third-round pick, and you give me Matt Stafford, and we got a deal. And it drew the ire of some of our listeners and a bunch of media people who have been talking about it on Twitter. It exploded. But JaVale and Culpepper has been waiting for a while to get his shot at you, Danny. JaVale, what's up,
go,
man? Welcome back. It's been a while.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Good, buddy.
Doing
what's
good.
Up?
Good. Hey, Danny, you're my guy, man. I really like you. You're my guy.
But
I really don't.
That's always the start of a. That's the start of a call. That he's not.
I
just
respect
you. What if
but,
someone did that and just hung up and said, "I just want you to have a good night." Nope, it's not going to end that way. Yeah.
Well, we had that drunk guy last week who told us how cute he thought we were. But
that's
yes,
true.
Back to you, JaVale, please.
No, however, I don't understand your view of Chase Young, man. You know, he may not have put up the sack totals that you know people were thinking of, but he made a difference. You know, he's a baller. He made plays. He also played the run much better than I expected and most people expected.
Me too.
The majority of the teams had to, you know, to double him or chip him with the back or a tight end. I think he made Montez much better. He had a much better season than he did his rookie year. I think he also made Allen and Payne much better. You know, you look at Chase, he's in his early 20s. Matt Stafford is in his early 30s. You know, you're going to have Chase for another 9-10 years where you may have Matthew Stafford for, you know, another 4 or 5 seasons. You know, so I just think that I understand that the quarterback is the most important position on the squad. But if you're going to give up, you know, if you're going to give up so much, I think you want to give up for younger. And I understand the quarterbacks play much longer now and your Brady's and your Breezes, you know, and Matt Stafford has been durable. He's only missed, what, 7-8 games in his 12 seasons. I understand that. But if I could get to the point where what I would trade for him, I would say definitely the first this season and a first two seasons out, because I feel with Matt Stafford two seasons out, we should be picking in the, you know, the bottom, you know, four, five, six teams.
Hopefully, JaVale, because you'd almost have to. Thanks for the call. Right? To justify the trade, if in the second year of the 2 years you have him, if you're not picking in the back half of the first round and you're not a playoff team, then it was probably a bit of a mess anyway. Two firsts is really steep. If one of the firsts is three drafts away, you know, 2 years after this one, it's not quite the same. And to that point, the Lions know that the value on a chart of what draft picks are worth with each passing year, even if it's the first round, does drop. But I offered a one this year, and I would go with a two the following year. If I had to give up a one and a two this season, while that would be ultra steep and it means I'm not picking until my two third-round picks this year, I would do that as well. I'm not going to give up any of the young marquee talent I've got on my roster. Remember, you've got four controllable years of Chase Young left. And we talk about this with quarterbacks, but just as a general rule, with the salary cap having exploded prior to this year, the high-priced positions, it's almost all of them now, I guess. When you think about
wide receiver, what is it now, right?
That's true. I mean, there's a couple still, like safety, other than Landon Collins. You know, there's a couple of spots. But, like, guards, look at Brandon Scherf.
Not even guard, I guess.
$17 million a year, probably. But edge rusher, left tackle, you know, wide receiver, those are now $20 million a year type positions. So it's a huge deal to have 4 years of control for Chase Young back. But I want to bring something up that a lot of people have asked on Twitter, which is this idea that you are protecting McLaurin but not Young. And the argument is that quarterback is so important that even an edge rusher, if they're great, is not as important as a quarterback. But it's really hard to make the case that an edge rusher is not more important than a wide receiver. So why protect McLaurin in the deal and not Chase Young?
So if this is just a team in a vacuum, the more important position to me is probably edge rusher over receiver. But this is not a vacuum. This is this team with a good defensive line, with Matt Ioannidis coming back, a replacement plus level player waiting in the wings in Kerrigan, who you could re-sign. And the drop-off wouldn't be as great as if you took Terry McLaurin off this wide receiver squad.
Got
this
you.
Group is in desperate need of offense. And they were in desperate need of offense before the season, during the season, and now. That's been the case, and that's why I was beating the drum back in before the draft and have been beating it all year long, is that they weren't good enough on offense, and it turns out ended up being the case. So that's kind of where this upgrade would go for me. So normally, like if you're just ranking positional value charts, right, if it's quarterback a million miles, and then, you know, right around left tackle, defensive end, or left tackle, pass rusher, you could argue the two. I would argue pass rusher over left tackle, et cetera. But here's the thing, and this is the other reality of it. You mentioned years of control of Young, and that's a great point, and it's true. We're not too many years away from this defensive line, as we know it, being broken up in some way. You can't pay everybody, right? So this thing's going to happen. And obviously, you'd be getting rid of the guy with the highest ceiling and the most promise, and I wouldn't like be that excited about doing it, but I do think it's cost of doing business if you want to upgrade a quarterback. But that's going to happen at some point. And by all accounts,
yes,
they're going to pay Josh. They're going to pay Allen.
You got two starting defensive ends, and you know who they are. Sweat and Young. It's not like you can't pay both of them or aren't going to keep them. You got the three tackles. Ioannidis on the cheap. You're going to have to pay Allen or Payne, I'm assuming. I'm pretty confident it's going to be Allen. A, because he's been a more productive player recently. B, because I think, you know, he is a guy that Dan Snyder wants to see around here. But you got 2 years left of Payne if you extend him out to the fifth year of his option. I mean, you could obviously package him into this deal for a quarterback or anything else that you try to do. But going back to what you just mentioned, because I think your explanation is actually very good. When you say why you'd protect McLaurin and not Young with this team, a little bit of a philosophical difference probably. I don't know that I'm making trades like that in the NFL. What I mean by that is things change so fast, man. They just, you know, at 19, maybe you draft an awesome wide receiver as an example. Or, you know, Matt Ioannidis hadn't finished the season yet, has he? I mean, we talk about the depth at D-tackle. He was out in September. He has been a shell of himself in the second half of like three straight years where he's been awesome in the fall, and then around Halloween, he's nowhere to be found anymore. I think I'm still prioritizing with all my moves, like overall analytical value, maybe. I don't know. I'd have to give that more thought. But to say, well, on this team, because I'm bad in this area, I would do this. I think you act as if, right? You always, like, what's more important, a pass rusher or a wide receiver? If you think, and you say you do, that it's pass rusher, then I don't know that I act differently because of the current state in this fleeting moment of this picture I can take of my roster today. Because that can change a lot in a year or two, let alone
no, it certainly can.
In a couple of months. I think you just stick with your process. Whatever your way of viewing a roster is and constructing a roster and what matters and what doesn't, you stick to those principles and those rules.
I think that's a salient point. That's a philosophical question. And I remember I was talking to Scott McLuhan years ago doing middays where, you know, I said, best player available always seems like a cop-out to me, right? What if the best player available for four straight rounds is a left tackle? You don't just do that, right? You have to have some eye to your roster. I'm not saying that it dominates your conversation. If you only draft out of need, you're going to end up missing on players. And that's kind of the nature of this league is replenish. Sometimes it may be not a position of need. Just see, again, what Washington just did this year. They'd have been okay if Ryan Kerrigan took the majority of the snaps. But Young is what he is. I mean, he's got the upside. So you just take him because those guys don't come along all that often when you're there at number two. So there's got to be some eye towards your own roster building. And how much, I think, is a very reasonable philosophical discussion. For me, I'm basically considering it this way. Generally, with what you're talking about, I think you're dead right. I think that's what I would default to. That's kind of my rule of, you know, best player available. That's the axiom. You just upgrade and positional value is going to win the day. Here, though, I'm basically going, I think I've got a window. And I think I'm a quarterback away and a piece or two on offense away. And if I have to get slightly worse on defense with some reinforcements coming, probably whether it's via the draft or via free agency or otherwise, I can restock a little bit there. But I'm close. I'm not going to make the move maybe that I normally would. And that might get you into trouble, honestly. I mean, that's a risk. But my point is I'm willing to take a huge risk right now just to get that QB.
Let's go to Bernie in Potomac Falls on line one. What's up, Bernie? How are you?
Hey, Bernie.
Hey, gentlemen. Hey, thanks. I think I know what you're saying. I mean, to me, the second best defensive end in the league is not as good as the 12th best quarterback in the league. I mean, simply a quarterback means more.
Right, and not as valuable is the word, right.
Yeah, the value is the key there, right.
That's what I mean. I mean, you're just not going to impact the game as much as a defensive end as you are as a quarterback. There's no way, especially the way the rules are set up now. But with that said, I'd give up a one this year and only a three next year because, I mean, I don't know. I think quarterback is the most important position because, one, it can lift a team. It can lift up an entire team. But at the same time, it can be affected the most if there isn't talent around it. It's the position that it can influence other positions the most. So if you have a great – I'm sure this league is full of great quarterbacks that have been buried because there's been no talent, that if they had played with someone else.
Yeah, Matt Stafford's one of them.
Stafford's a good one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, I mean, Stafford, I want Stafford, but he's also had the advantage of playing at least half his games every year in 72 degrees on a track field with Calvin Johnson. I mean, there's something to be said to that. I do want Stafford, but not at two number ones. So I know you got a lot of calls, gentlemen. I appreciate you taking this
one. I appreciate you.
Thank you, buddy. Good call.
I mean, Calvin Johnson hadn't played in 6 years, so he hadn't been making Matt Stafford look very good over the last five seasons. You're right about him playing indoors on carpet. There's a lot of guys in the league that can say that. Are we taking away from Drew Brees for that? I don't know that we are. Like, Tom Brady got to play two games against New Orleans inside. You know, they played, I think, at Minnesota inside. Are we going back this season and looking at how often he was indoors as opposed to not? That's part of the schedule. I don't know that I take away from that, per se.
Well, but here's let me do this. We talk about this sometimes when it has to do with, yeah, they beat up on a bad opponent. Well, my counter to that is they did what they're supposed to do with a bad opponent. If you give Matt Stafford a Hall of Fame caliber superstar, oh, my God, he's unstoppable wide receiver, he throws for 5,000 yards and 41 touchdowns, right? Like, when Johnson was healthy and Stafford was healthy, both in their early 20s, you saw glorious music. You saw a 1,681-yard, 16-touchdown season from Calvin Johnson. So I look at it the other way. Yes, he benefits from having Calvin Johnson. There's no question about that. Any quarterback in the history of this league would when Johnson is healthy and in his prime. But what did you do with it? Well, he had an ungodly season that we've never seen here. So that's kind of how I view that. Did you do what you're supposed to do with the great weapon? You did? Awesome. Pick him up.
What interests me the most, maybe fascinates me the most, is a better way to say it, is how picky it seems like some members of this fan base are about finding a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And the only comp, and it's tired, is like the single buddy who hasn't dated in a long time and doesn't have a whole lot going for himself. That's Washington as far as what they've been for close to 30 years. And you're, you know, swiping on Tinder for him and he's going, no, don't swipe right on her. And you're like, are you kidding me?
Are you serious?
Who do you think you are? What are you expecting? You think you just sit on a couch eating buffalo wings, getting fatter, and some gorgeous girl with a great personality is going to accidentally open your door trying to go somewhere else and just fall in love with you at first sight? Like, what are you anticipating here? What is your end game? If not a Stafford, then who? And how are you getting there? What is your alternative? That's what I would ask every single person who says, I'm not giving up more than a 3 for Matt Stafford. Cool, so you're not getting Matt Stafford, so what is your plan? And if they say Taylor Heineke, or they say Kyle Allen?
The Case Keenum tier again.
Fine, then know what you are. You're a team that goes into next year among the 20 teams that doesn't have a chance to win the Super Bowl. If you get a quarterback, I'm not saying they can win the Super Bowl next year because we could do this tomorrow, but their schedule is a bear. But at least in the next 2 years, there is a path to them being a legitimate contender to go on a playoff run. But I just it is incredible to me. It's as if we've learned nothing
I know.
About how difficult it is. When you have a decent quarterback that gives you a chance week in and week out what that looks like, and if you're not doing that and you all of a sudden have Josh Johnson – starting because the plane crashed into the mountain, or Mark Sanchez is starting, or Taylor Heineke in a playoff game. But it's like I don't want to say we don't learn, but it's like people just don't acknowledge the Grand Canyon difference between those things.
This is my point. This has been my point forever. I don't understand why everybody's not as desperate as me. Like, everyone should be 100% on my level. I will do whatever
desperate.
I have to.
If you're trading Chase Young without batting an eye, you're sifting through the trash can looking for something to eat.
If I was Green Bay and I was like, nah, this Hall of Famer bores me. Bring me another. Okay, maybe you could call me a jackass for wanting to trade Za'Darius Smith for somebody's 32-year-old that they no longer want. Okay, fine. Make fun of me then. This is Washington. It's us. It's Chicago. Us in Chicago. The most embarrassing quarterback situations in the universe.
Are you letting Cleveland leave that bucket after Baker had a decent year?
Pretty much. Cleveland's got a guy that's fine. He's fine. He's under contract. All they had to do was draft 28 different dudes. Brandon Whedon says hi, along with Johnny Manziel somewhere typing weird troll tweets. Yes, we are in the trash bin. Be desperate, please. Please match my desperation.
I'd love to ask you what you're having for dinner, but I know that the answer is that you don't know. You've never once known what you're going to eat for dinner before you sit down at the table.
How could anyone know?
Very easy. Quick conversation. A little bit of communication where they say, hey, what are we thinking for dinner tonight?
It's one of those things where I'm not making it, so it sounds very ungrateful when I do it. I haven't figured out that tone yet. So
all you have
like
to do is
jerk.
Say, hey, I'm just curious, what's for dinner tonight?
So
see how easy that is?
Yeah, the
or
favor
do you
you're doing
care?
Me, and I'm just down here.
Do you not care at all? That
no,
could
I care.
Be it, too.
I'm excited to eat dinner. I'm very pro-dinner. I'm starving.
It doesn't seem like you're that excited about dinner.
I just don't know what it's for dinner. How could anyone know?
Well, we know one thing. You will not be posting it on Instagram. You're anti-posting pictures of your food on Instagram.
That is
thanks
correct.
To our producers, Tom and Darius, today. For Danny, I'm Grant, saying so long. We are back at it tomorrow at 2 o'clock right here on 106.7.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.